cordially welcome you to my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing, but I'm singing lots of contemporary and experimental music, and I do performance. If you would like to know more about me and all about my concerts and anything I'm doing, please look at my website www.irenekurke.de. It is also possible to subscribe to my monthly newsletter. You will find the button on my starting page, on my homepage, and you will find out everything about me, what I'm doing singing-wise or with this podcast or with my books or with my radio. As some of you know, I have this format. It's called Chaos Radio Summit. It's a radio station that is based in California. And I do a show every fourth Saturday in a month. And I called it Live Your Music and Live Your Life. And I'm presenting great music there for you. And after the live streaming on this Saturday, in the fourth Saturday in a month, it will also be presented in a podcast format that you can also listen to it if, you know, you cannot make it. Or, I mean, some of my listeners live in a different time zone and whatever, they're already sleeping. And yeah, so you could also follow me there. But all these informations, are in my newsletter. In this podcast, I talk with you about themes all around this thing we call new music, experimental contemporary music, and I share with you the behind the scenes, the insider knowledge, and what is most important to me. I really want to bring you the human beings out of this world closer to you. And I thank you so much that you're tuning in, that you're following me, that some of you are writing me where you are. What this podcast does with you, or sometimes you also give me great inspirations or ideas for future episodes. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung, which is one of the most important German music papers we have here. In today's episode interview, I talk with the composer, the Spanish composer, Alberto Posadas. It has been a great pleasure for me to talk to him, and I'm also thanking David Molina that he got us in touch with each other, because I really think Alberto is an amazing man and human being, and I think you can take a lot out of this open and honest interview. I really enjoyed it, and before we started the interview, I didn't know that I once was in a project in Spain, that he somehow was involved in this project behind the scenes, that he kind of recommended this piece. And so it's always interesting how small our world can be, that you meet people, but somehow you already have been slightly in touch with each other already, but I didn't know. So that is also cool. And so you will find out a lot about Alberto. So enjoy the interview with Alberto Posadas. Hello, and I welcome you, Alberto Posadas, today into my podcast.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure to share this time with you and with all the listeners.
You're welcome. And we're here on a Sunday morning. We actually have it quite hot in Germany today, which is maybe more normal in your country, but here not. And at first, I would like to know from you, how did you find your way into this thing, the new and experimental music?
It was really by chance, I have to say. Since I was a child, I was very much interested in music. I was playing piano, just imitating my sister, who was 3 years and a half older than me, and I was Even since I was 12, 13 years ago old, I was writing music. I wouldn't say this was composing, but just writing in the style of those composers from whom I was playing music, Haydn, Beethoven, Schumann, etc. And at that time, I was living in my hometown where I was born, in Valladolid. The musical scenario there was very little, so my way to get in touch with music was through radio. And one day, when I was around 13, I listened to a piece of the so-called contemporary music. I cannot remember what it was, but I was really shocked because I discovered that there was a completely different world of sounds that I couldn't reach. My question was, okay, I'm writing like tonal music, etc., like Haydn, etc. How is it possible to notate those crazy sounds, crazy at that time for me, those crazy sounds? And then I was so fascinated that I started to listen to more and more in the radio, just searching for inputs about contemporary music. And I have to say that this broadcast changed my life. Really, it changed my life. And some years after, when I was around, I don't know, 17, 18, something happened also very important for me in my life. I was very interested at that time about the relationship between music and mathematics. And by chance as well, it was organized in Valladolid, a workshop about this topic precisely, music and mathematics. So, okay, I went there. And there was a composer giving this workshop. I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know his music. And well, it was very strange because it was like a weekend and I was frustrated. I didn't like at all what he said. I regret to attend that. I think maybe for two reasons. In the end, he was my maestro years after. So I think for two reasons. Well, first, he was a very radical person, very provocative in his way of talking. And I think I was too young to understand what he was trying to say. Okay, some months after, again in the same place, it was organized a workshop in general about contemporary music. And then I went there. Again, I didn't know who was the composer talking about that, but I just went there. And then I found again this, let's say, nasty man. And at the beginning, I thought, okay, here again with him. But then it was completely different because he presented some of his pieces. I'm talking about Francisco Guerrero. He was my maestro. And then I fall in love with his music, really. And then after that, I asked him to have lessons by him. And then I went to Madrid to study composition with him because, well, the way to teach composition in the conservatories in Spain was not very interesting for me. So I decided to go to him. And let's say this broadcast and this meeting with Francisco Guerrero shaped, in a way, my future life.
Wow, that's amazing how it all came to you, and also the thing you're shocked and fascinated and you don't know, but something kept you going. I always find that fascinating. When I was at the gymnasium at the high school, I was at a music high school, and we actually got taught already Stockhausen and Cage and all kind of wild things, and we listened to Berlioz-Sequenza, the one for voice. And I was like 14, 15, and I was at the same time so shocked because I really thought this woman is hurting her voice. And at the same time, there was the small voice in my head that said, Irene, you're gonna sing this piece. Like, I wanted to become an opera singer, and now I'm doing new music. So it's fascinating. And how did this math thing show up again? I mean, I know it's also, I think on your website or something I researched about you, it's always about music, mathematics, nature, and architecture spaces. That's what I read somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think you read that in my website because I never did a website, but probably you found that information somewhere else. Yes, at that time, I was very fascinated about the relationship between mathematics and music because maybe following the idea of Galileo, I thought mathematics is the language to describe nature. And in fact, in deepness, I was interested in the relationship between nature and music, because in the end, we are working with sound, and sound it's an objective reality if we talk about waves, etc. So I wanted to address this relationship between a natural phenomenon and compositional processes. And mathematics was the language to go into deep into it. And normally what I was interested in, it was about the idea of avoiding to describe something from nature. I didn't want to imitate sounds from nature, etc. I wanted to research about how one concrete phenomenon in nature is working, in order to get like a sort of model to create a dramaturgy of the piece. Because I found that in nature we have very efficient models, efficient in the sense that with a very little and small seeds, very complex structures can grow up. And I was fascinated by this idea. And I was working on for years with fractals, some other systems coming from the chaos theory, etc. And well, years after I changed, I went into something different. I went also into the relationship between different arts, artistic disciplines, and music, like architecture, as you mentioned before, painting, video, etc. And just after, I really changed a lot. Let's say, with this approach of using mathematics, I'm very happy to have gone through this way. But at some point, I felt that I was thinking the music a bit from the outside. So I was writing a music which was not very idiomatic, because I was very interested in structure, form, timing, materials, etc., which is very important as well, I think. But I was using a type of musical material which was very neutral and very basic in terms of quantity of information, let's say. And also by chance, as many things in life, something happened. I received a commission for a solo flute piece. And then I felt absolutely lost. After some years writing for big ensemble, orchestra, etc., with big structures, I felt lost. What can I do with a flute? And then I thought, okay, I need to learn something from the instrument different. And I took the flute myself. I spent some months. My instrument is piano, but I took the flute. I spent some months just playing the flute and making some drafts for myself. And then I discovered for myself this type of idiomatic writing. This was 1995, a long time ago. And from that moment, I started to combine both approaches, mathematics, let's say, a more external approach to the music, and something more internal, from the music itself, in this case, from the instruments.
Oh, that's cool how you brought it together. And also, I mean, I think for maybe for some people, but it probably also depends what you have experience with it. Maybe writing an orchestra piece is really, really challenging. You know, you're like, oh, I'm so used to this, but to then just write for one instrument and go back to this kind of reduction, because I mean, one instrument does different things than, I don't know, 40 instruments. Yeah. Yeah,
The apparently less resources you have, the more difficult is to write something. Because when you have an orchestra, you have so many resources that I used to say to the young composers, with an orchestra, you can hide yourself.
Oh.
You can hide the lacks you have as a composer. But with a solo piece, And even you'd say, because you are a singer, with music a cappella, vocal music a cappella, or with string quartet, you cannot hide yourself. You are really naked in front of the listeners, but naked in front of yourself, because you don't have all those elements related to timbre, change of densities, etc., etc., that can help you to escape from some particular problematic spots you find in your piece when you are writing.
Wow, that's really interesting and also very honest. And actually, I do a lot of a cappella singing as well as whatever singing with orchestra. And it is like you said, you're very naked, vulnerable. There's nothing you can hide, but I like it in a way. And at first it has been a challenge because I also sing whole programs, like whatever hour, just me on stage. And at first I also thought a little bit like maybe you with the flute. I'm like, who's gonna listen to me an hour? Just one voice, one person. Isn't that boring? But it never was. The people were almost like, oh, you could have sung on forever. And so you just have to do it. Wow. I also find this thing with mathematics interesting also in this regard. I mean, we also know people like Schoenberg and Webern when they did the 12 tone thing, and it's a theory and you can take it very strictly. But then also the nice thing is, and those three guys, Berg, Webern and Schoenberg, did it really well, that it still is very musical what came out, because in the end, I guess maybe I don't want to hear that there is like something math or some big thing I thought, because I also want to be whatever touched by the music and to also bring this together, that maybe there is a technique, but it still is music and it doesn't sound constructed.
Of course, technique is something very important for a composer, for a singer, instrumentalist, for everybody. Technique is really something we need to have, but it's not enough. I think the reason, because, for instance, this 12-tone system worked for these three cases you have mentioned, it is because for them, it was the tool they needed to create. It is something different maybe for later generations of composers, because this was in a way already established. So it is something that it is, it doesn't belong to you. You have to take it for yourself and it can work. But it is not something that belongs to you from its beginning. And they were building this. This is something that can happen once in the history, of course. But later on, composers who have used mathematics to compose, I think they changed the approach. I used to say that, my father is Francisco Guerrero, my grandfather is Yanis Xenakis, for instance. The approach in this type of music concerning the use of mathematics is very different, because also the mathematics at that time were very, very different. It was not an approach so deterministic, let's say. And then all the theory about chaos came up when I was a teenager. It was the big explosion of this theory in the 70s, etc., fractals, etc. So it was a very different way to deal with mathematics. But I remember myself at that time, I felt, not only me, but a group of composers, we were building something new at that time. So something that we needed to create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Sometimes it's, the time is there that something new has to show up. But I also like it how you describe it, that there are certain things came up. And the question is then, I mean, you can learn from it or you can play with it or even imitate it for a while, but then how do you make it your own? And also when I whatever think of a person like Lachenmann, who also had then his very distinct style with very soft noises and all this. And it's wonderful how he does it. But we also know there have been whatever followers, and some of them also found their way with it. And some you are like, is this just a copy? And that's then the question. And I mean, you're teaching, so you are confronted with this probably almost every day with your students, because they also have to find themselves, whatever inspires them or whatever they try out. And how do you help them to figure out what's really theirs?
Well, I have been teaching in two very different contexts. I'm teaching regularly in Spain in a conservatory, teaching a music theory, which is not real composition. So this is something different. And I have been teaching in composition mostly as a guest professor in Graz or in Switzerland, in Lucerne, or in academies like Impulse, Manifest, etc. There, the context is different because the students are young composers, but already experienced. They are finishing the master or in the first years of their professional life. So it's very different. So maybe I will focus on this second profile of students. Well, I'm not able to help them. If I'm honest, I'm not able to help them. My intention is not, it's not really to give them a solution or a way they have to go through. Over the time, I learned that the best way to learn is just to listen to the young composer, what she or he is trying to do, and to try to, this is maybe a bit utopic, but to try to put yourself into their brain, into their way of thinking. And from that perspective, just to put some questions on the table and to talk about those questions. I think this is the maximum we can do, because to give an answer to those questions is something that only can be given by them, not by any professor, I think. For sure, you have listened to this very, very often, but I think it was Boulez maybe who said this the first time, or I don't know, that it is possible to learn composing, but it's not possible to teach it. So you only can have some guides to question themselves about their work. This is the maximum you can do. Of course, there are some technical issues that, okay, this is something different. This you can teach, really. But the other aspect is really difficult. And I remember two very bad lessons I gave. I don't think I will forget those two lessons, because I was very bad giving those two lessons in two academies of this. And just after I met one of those students, already still down, but already established composer, and we both spoke about this, and I told him, look, that lesson was for me. It was not for you. Because I learned so much about what I did wrong in that lesson that it helped me a lot for lessons I gave years after. And sometimes when you are teaching to young composers, you have very strange surprises. Because some years after you meet, this happened to me almost 3 weeks ago. You meet a composer. You don't remember, in this case, him. I didn't remember him as a student of mine, because I have given too many lessons, I cannot remember all of them. And he told me, Alberto, you told me this in this context, and it helped me a lot. It changed my view of the music, and I was not aware of that. So, again, chance plays a role also in terms of oral transmission, because teaching in the end in music, and I'm very lucky, I'm very happy about this, music, teaching music is oral transmission, mostly. Mm-hmm. You can read books, you can analyze music, of course, this is important, but in the end, it's oral transmission. And I think this is something that you can experience even more when you are a singer or instrumentalist. You can read books about singing, or you can listen to recordings, but it's really oral transmission. And this is, for me, this is great because then there we can find the dimension of the human being, not only of the professor, but of the young musician. And, well, this is wonderful. To me,
It's wonderful. I mean, also what you say, that you really listen. I mean, that's a quality most people don't have or don't think it's important, because many people just, they want to talk themselves, but to really listen can change so much. And I think if you already provide this, this is amazing. And then they discover themselves. And also this, how you say, well, they come back years later. And I mean, you also mentioned this, that you heard this guy at this class and you were like, I don't think I like it. And years later, dim, 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 dim. No, I get it. And I guess it's just also the curiosity that keeps us in this field, because oftentimes we don't know, and we keep going for a reason we don't even know why, maybe.
Yeah. But for instance, you have said, you have talked about listening. I always say to the young composers, we are not composers. Before composers, we are listeners. So the way you are listening to Bach, to Beethoven, is influencing as well the way you are composing. There is no a different job. Let's say there is no a boundary between how we listen and how we compose. In my opinion, maybe I'm wrong. I feel it like that. I don't know. And more and more often, I find young composers who are not attending concerts, for instance, because their input, the input for them is coming from internet. And for me, this is a pity because it's, maybe I'm getting old, but this is a way to miss the connection with the reality of music. Because music requires human beings, instrumentalists, musicians, etc., requires a space that you will never have using headphones. It is like a dead object to just to have only recordings, like the input, the main and only input. Why not to use recordings? Of course, we need nowadays to use recordings. But to lose the contact with the reality, I would wonder why I want to compose music. Even me, I'm not attending the concert. But maybe it's the view of an old guy, I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned this, and maybe it is because they have a different relationship with all the whatever technical stuff and possibilities and streaming services and all that. When I remember my days at university, and we didn't have all of this, there were also already kind of two type of students. There were the ones, I was the ones who kind of went in every concert. And I'm very thankful for that. And I observed so much. And then the ones that hardly went. And then I turned into a person who, I mean, I do my work, but I love going to concerts. I only listen to recordings when I have to. So I'm totally the opposite. And I really love this this live experience. And as you said, it's the whole thing, how people are in the hall, the atmosphere, the energy, everything. And yeah.
Yeah, it's music is not only sound in time. This is very important, of course, but it is something else. It is what it is. We can find around the sound phenomenon. There are many, many things around, even the social aspect of meeting people before the concert or after the concert and talking about what you have listened to about. And of course, now can be this can be done through internet. There are so many platforms and ways to do it. I don't mean it's necessary to avoid this; it would be stupid. But now we are lucky that we can combine all those ways to face and to have a relationship with music. Why to renounce to the life music, because live music for me is music. That's the music.
And I mean, since you know Spain quite well and you studied there and you live there again, but you have been around places in Germany and other places, how would you describe the like the Spanish music scene for contemporary music, or how is it different, or what is special or very, very good there, and we could learn from the Spanish people?
Well, I don't want to be very hard with the Spanish reality, but for historical reasons, I think we are very far from Germany, Austria, the center of Europe, Paris, etc. We are very far from there. If we are honest, we have to admit this. Also, because historical reasons, some arts have been very strong over the time. For centuries in Spain. In Spain, music was very strong in the so-called golden century. And after that, we had like some bright moments, like in the early 20th century, etc. But we lost the thread because some dark centuries in the history of Spain, and music became something really not relevant in general. So I don't try to say that there's nothing in Spain, but we cannot compare Madrid with Berlin, Paris, not at all. Concerning contemporary music, the scene in Spain is very little, very active. This is a good point. I mean, there is some people who is really involved on creating something with very little resources, very little budgets, without a structure, because they really believe on what they are doing. And this impulse for me is wonderful, and it's very important as well, especially when you don't have a very strong structure in terms of culture in general, in terms of contemporary music in particular. This is very, very important. And maybe because this lack of resources, there was also a very interesting moment in the recent history. It was when I was a teenager, precisely when I was starting to compose. This was the beginning of the democracy in Spain. And at that time in Spain, there was like an explosion of many, many things that were a bit hidden in the years before. And people wanted to do something. Whatever, I don't mean only music. But cinema, theater, circus, everything. There was an explosion of energy. And then at that time, a generation of Spanish composers, some a bit older than me, but let's say until my age, more or less, many Spanish composers came up. We went abroad. We had space abroad more than in Spain, in many cases. And I remember once in France, in Paris, and maybe it was mid-90s or something like this, I remember one artistic director told me, Alberto, how can you explain that now, by a sudden, you find so many composers, Spanish composers, in Europe? What happened? And most of us, we didn't have good conservatories, we didn't have a big structure, we didn't have ensembles, but we had the need to let that energy go out. And this gave really an impulse. And nowadays, there are many Spanish young composers, and I'm talking now about younger, all over the world, because I think this has a certain continuity. This is very good. But the bad thing is that most of them, they have to go abroad and, well, to be played abroad. And it's a pity, because in Spain there are very, very good instrumentalists, really good instrumentalists. Most of them go abroad and they remain abroad. I mean about those who want to play contemporary music. Because even if in Spain you have very good instrumentalists, there are no solid structures to support ensembles, etc. They are working in so bad conditions that most of them decide, okay, I have to work abroad. This is the weak point.
Well, I can only wish that, I mean, since you said there's so much good energy and intention, that it will build up. And I mean, we're lucky that we can listen to you here then, but I think it's also great that something happens in Spain.
Well, something is happening, but it's too little for the energy, the common energy of the composers arising.
And do the audiences like contemporary music in Spain?
Well, here I'm a bit less optimistic than David when I listened to his podcast. There is a little audience, honestly, if we admit it, if we want to be honest, there is a little audience. It is true that it is a very loyal audience. They are very involved and they follow the season or the festival or whatever. But even if they repeat going into the concert, it's a very little audience what we have. In my opinion, because we don't, in Spain, we don't understand that the audience has the need to be created. It doesn't come by itself. And it is even more difficult nowadays because you have everything. I mean, you have not only the historical issues like theater, cinema, etc., but you also have the internet with all the platforms, etc. So we need to let the people know that this exists, because many people in Spain don't know that contemporary music exists. Even people who is attending concerts for Beethoven symphonies, they don't know even that this music exists. And we need to communicate. We need to communicate, okay, why this type of music? It is not a matter of giving lessons about the music, but why? To let the people get the roots of this type of music. Because otherwise, it's like if you are listening to something which is really not connected to you. Some people, like me when I was a teenager, because we're very curious and we want to learn, will be fascinated by this. But many people maybe will take a more lazy position and will say, okay, I don't get it, I don't understand this. Okay, I don't want to have relation with this. We need to do something for this. But
yeah, thank you for this. Thank you very much for explaining all this. And I know that you're also written for voice. And as a singer, I'm always curious how it is for you to write for voice. Is it special? Is it different? Is it challenging? Is it easy?
Well, I think composing is always difficult, not only for voice. And well, voice is something very, very special. It is something I avoided for years. Of course, I wrote for voice when I was very young, a student, because you have to develop your techniques, etc. But for years, I avoided to write for voice. I did not have very clear what I could do with voice. I had a certain fear to write for voice, if I'm honest. But once I started to write for voice, I'm more and more interested in writing for voice. Something, a new door was opened to me. There are two aspects maybe I could mention. One aspect is when you are writing for a voice, you are not writing for an instrument. Of course, if you write for a clarinet and two different clarinetists are playing the same piece, they are going to play different, of course. But in the end, they are using a tool, which is the clarinet, to make the sound real. While if you are writing for a singer, there is no tool, there is a body. Of course, there's technique, etc. And there's a body. And this body is unique. So you have to know that everything you write for a singer maybe will need to be adapted in a certain way for a different singer. Just because she or he has a different body, she cannot project the sound in the same way. she cannot sing with a particular vowel in one particular register, the passing register, etc. So many things that are so individual. But for me, this is great. This is great. And I used to compare this with writing for an organ. When you write for an organ and you write a registration, okay, the organist goes to another church, he or she has to adapt because the organ is different. So here it's a bit different. There are things that you cannot adapt how to use the tool, the organ. You have to adapt the score to the body of the singer. So this makes we were talking about live music. This makes the reality of music even more alive, because it is something unique. It is something that cannot be repeated by somewhere else. And then this is what I mentioned also before, that for me this is very interesting, because then you are working with a human being. Of course you are working with a human being if you write for a flute, but with a voice, it's a human being with the body, with the restrictions, let's say, and resources of the individual body. And well, this is great. I remember I was teaching in an academy in Strasbourg, in which Sara Maria Sun was teaching as well. I'm sure you know her. She's so great and wonderful person, and singer, of course. And she was teaching to composers. And she did something very, very clever. She presented some recordings of, if I remember well, if it was Boris Godunov, okay, the opera. And she showed different recordings of one particular moment sung by five different singers over the years, and how all those singers were modifying the vowel, the attack of the vowel or one particular consonant, etc., because they needed to do that. So it was not because Mussorgsky wrote something wrong, but it was because each singer needed to adapt the writing to the instrument, which in this case is mostly the body. But there is something else. When I was so afraid of writing for voice, I felt like, in a way, like in a jail, because there were at that moment many composers saying, okay, you cannot write let's say normal singing, because this is very traditional. And on the contrary, there were some singers who were saying, okay, you cannot write for me whispering, because I'm a singer, I want to sing melodies, etc. There was this conflict, for sure, you know about this. And at some point I decided, okay, I have to feel free. I have to struggle with this, but feeling free. And for me, there's no difference between writing traditional singing and writing the so-called extended techniques. There's no difference, because extended techniques are not new anymore. I mean, for me, using a whispering, or microcontrabass, or inhaling, all those techniques are so traditional as normal singing. So why to create a boundary? I can also write for this or for this. No, I like to combine both things, and especially to be able to give a role. If I write, let's say, traditional singing, it must be for some reason. If I write a multiphonic for a voice, it must be for some reason. It cannot be because I like this or I like the other. That's too banal. I need to find a reason according to the concept. For instance, of the text, I'm using text or non-text, just in case it is a phonetic text or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like the first part, that you really can accept the differences in us singers, because it makes it easier for us to be seen, and not that we felt we try to get put into a box or something. And as you say, certain things are maybe easy for one singer and difficult for the other, and the other way around. And you cannot even explain it. It doesn't have to be logic in a way. And it's interesting because sometimes I think with us, some people maybe try to force it. But as you said, if an organ doesn't have a register, you work it out. You don't try to force it, or
right.
And so sometimes it would be nice that some composer also would have this understanding with us that it's not about that I don't want to do something, but maybe certain things. I mean, I'm one of the people, and I know Kate the Barbarian was the same. I cannot whistle. So, I mean, I tell people right away, I like the sound, but obviously it's one of the things I cannot do. And yeah, it's really cool. And I like that, yeah.
But also in that situation, I mean the singer in this case, or the instrumentalist and the composer, can have the feeling that they are building something together. And for me, this is very important. I mean, they are trying out different ways to work with this problem, and they're trying to find some solution together. For me, this is very important, to have this connection with the instrumentalist. Of course, you don't have this connection when you are writing for an orchestra, but when you are writing for solo pieces, chamber music, a little ensemble, you have the chance to do this. And for me, this is wonderful.
When you write for voice, so you probably often know before who is singing it. Does it help you?
Yes, it helps me. Yeah. I know that later on it will be necessary to adapt something for later singers, but yes, I work in advance for some particular singers, so I speak to them, and I want to know about their voice, the same that I want to know about an alto flute or a bass clarinet. I have to know this. In this case, I have to know the particular singer, because it's unique.
And when I look now at your day, I mean, you're composing, you're teaching, you're all doing great stuff, and I'm always curious how people handle all of this. Are you a structured person? Are you spontaneous? How do you get everything done that needs to get done?
I have no enough time to do everything I want. Yes, but I'm quite structured working. I wake up, and after a coffee, I come to my studio, and every day I work, every day. I mean, 7 days a week, I come to my studio every day. It doesn't mean that every day I do exactly the same. It depends in which part of the compositional process you are. But coming to my studio every day does not mean that I'm writing on a score every day, because I used to invest a lot of time in the pre-compositional process, making drafts, thinking about materials, taking the instrument myself and trying out different things, exchanging recordings with musicians, all this work, which is not the fact of writing the score. This will come later. But I need to have this regular visit to my studio. And of course, this is interrupted when I have to teach and when I have to travel. I used to work as isolated as I can. But over the time, I learned to write music in the airport or in the train, or in the end, you have to make useful all those moments, useless moments. And but I need to feel that I'm isolated. I cannot compose. I cannot even think if someone else comes to my studio. So for instance, when I wait in the airport, I go to the very end of the terminal where nobody is there, and I try to be as isolated as possible. I need to feel, I used to say that I'm a cloistered composer, let's say.
Like to go into nature, or do you do other things?
More and more. Yes. Because living in Madrid, I like Madrid so much. But, I miss also the peace of being in nature, the weather, the everything you can feel there that you cannot feel in your studio. And I'm doing that more and more. And some of my late pieces have been written in the mountains, trying to escape from the city. That's also very important. But one thing that I don't know if the people who is not composing music, I mean, just normal listeners, I don't know if they are very aware of this, but to me, at least to me, for me, composing is not an activity. It's not a job. Okay, I come to my studio every day, morning, but it doesn't mean that I have to be in the chair, on the chair 7 hours and then it's over. No, composing is something that happens 24 hours a day, even sometimes when you are in between some dreams. Composing can be to go to a church, to sit. This is something I used to do. To sit on it and just to listen. Just to listen to the space. I like architecture, I like painting, but when I go to churches, for instance, for tourism, etc., I spend some time just seated inside the church, just listening. How the sound reacts to the people walking around. If there is a service, a religious service, I listen to the sound. I mean, to the sound. That experience, or to go to the mountains and to listen to the water or whatever, that's also composing. I mean, we are dealing and we are working with sound and we are surrounded by sound. So it's really, for me, it's really almost impossible not to compose in terms of not to have sound, inhabited sound. I describe to inhabit sound is part of composing for me, and this is happening if you want at any moment, everywhere.
Wow, it's everywhere. Everything is intertwined. Wow, and yeah, we covered so many great things, and we probably could go on forever. It would be very interesting. But yeah, we're at the last question, and to round it up, even though you already said so many important things, is there anything else you would like to add, what we could give as a tip to young composers, young artists?
Well, I'm always a bit scared of giving advices, because maybe I'm not anyone to give any advice to a young composer, but if I have to say something, I would say be yourself. But be yourself is not only to avoid following trends, it is being patient. Being patient and take the time to be yourself. Don't try to push. To push it, it will come. If it has to come, it will come in a natural way. And someday you will realize that you were already yourself since a certain time ago. Don't try to force it, because then you will not grow up as yourself. You will grow up as a opposition to something else. And sometimes we need to be against something, because composing is choosing and choosing is renouncing. But we need to build ourselves, and this is a process over time. And I would say this for a young composer, but I would say the same thing for myself. I'm changing over time. I'm not composing the same piece for years, even with the same view. But I don't try to force this for myself. I would tell them to do exactly the same. And maybe the last thing is look to the sound. Look to the sound and care it. Even if you want to add something else to sound, like, I don't know, video, lighting, performing act, whatever, care the sound, because we are composers. We are working with sound.
It's interesting, because sometimes I also ask about how it is to be authentic or true, or what you say, and I find that one of the hardest things to do, or at least when I look at my life, to really be honest and not, you know, try to follow things that are maybe not for me. And this other thing you mentioned with the patient, If you already had it, I admire you because that's also something I had to learn. I was the queen of pulling on the grass and realizing within the whatever last, I don't know, 5 years, it's working much better if I don't pull anything, and things just come and they feel good. And sometimes I'm so surprised because great things happen too. But for me, that was a really tough lesson. But it's great. Maybe if all the whatever 20 years old already get it now, congratulations.
Well, it's something very particular. Maybe someone else needs to do it differently, and but well, it was just my experience, and I only can give an advice, if I may, after my experience.
Sure. And it is a very wise advice, I think. It's a very good end. So I thank you so much for taking your time with me today, and yeah, I wish you all the best.
Thanks to you, Irene, and it has been a really pleasure to share this time. Thanks so much.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.